From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made with a question. If you had fallen asleep in February and woke up today in early June, would you know that you're living in the middle of a global pandemic? Maybe not. The warm weather has shown us that people are certainly ready to be outside. And for a moment, I want to move beyond the conversation of just the recent demonstrations. We're not going to take those out of our focus. We can't. But this is a conversation that really kind of brewed up with that first warm weekend. I mean, you went outside in Rochester and surrounding areas. Just a couple of weeks ago, there were backyard barbecues, large parties, big gatherings in public spaces. Down at Ontario Beach Park, you saw people walking along the pier, crowding in line at Abbott's for ice cream. But among all those people engaging in those activities, how many are physically distanced or wearing masks? Will we see an increased number of COVID-19 cases as a result? To say nothing, of course, of the demonstrations that have drawn hundreds or thousands of people. Research shows that the risk of transmitting and contracting the virus outdoors is a lot lower than it is indoors. The risk is not zero. Medical experts and government officials have advised community members to stay vigilant in protecting themselves and others. Meanwhile, experts who spoke with NPR recently said certain activities like exercising outdoors, going camping, going to a beach or a pool are relatively low risk if done appropriately. In the Netherlands, realizing that isolation and a lack of intimacy are wearing on people, the Dutch government has proposed a harm reduction strategy. For single people, their health leaders have proposed getting a quarantine, and I'm going to use the Dutch phrase, a quarantine sex buddy, S-E-K-S-B-U-D-D-Y. They believe that that's a part of life, it's important, but they think it's important to be limited in our contact. In Canada, officials in several provinces have offered guidance on so-called double bubbles, where two households have an exclusive relationship without the need for physical distancing. So maybe you've been hanging out with one household. In Canada, they're saying double it up. Give yourself a little bit of a break. See other people, but keep it limited. But public health officials across the globe reiterate the point that every social interaction increases risk. So what should our expectations be as we enter the summer during the pandemic? How should we adjust our behavior so we can keep reopening and stay safe? And how should we be having these conversations? Our guests are going to help us in various ways this hour. You're going to hear from Willie Lightfoot, who is Vice President of Rochester City Council. He's also President of the United Professional Barbers and Cosmetologists Association. You're also going to hear from Brandon Drew, who is the Vice President of Business Development for Abbott's Frozen Custard. And Jane Dodds is with us, a former medical practice manager who's on the line with us now, talking about the public health aspects of this. Jane, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Evan, and thanks for all you do.
Well, you're very kind. I'm gonna try to remember the first time I had heard from you when I was hosting the program. I could be wrong here, and please tell me if I'm wrong. But I think it might have been when we were having a conversation about abstinence-only education. And we were talking to a couple of folks, well, people from very different sides of that argument, but there were some who viewed it from a religious perspective and said that sex was outside of marriage was unholy, that wasn't something that God wanted, and that the only really proper thing to teach kids was abstinence. And you sent an email that I will not forget. I will not recite all of it here. But you essentially said baloney, and that abstinence only is a bad way to get the results you're looking for. Do you still feel that way in a lot of different spheres in public health?
I think it's true that espousing only one opinion and not allowing for the variations in human behavior and human beliefs is never a good idea. And as it relates to this COVID virus, you know, promoting staying in your own apartment and not ever going out and not ever seeing another person is like abstinence. That's the safest way not to get the virus. But just like abstinence-only education for sex, it's not going to work for a lot of people.
And so let's talk a little bit about this, because we have listeners who've been asking us for days now. There's a lot of talk about business reopenings. What about family gatherings? What about hanging out in the backyard? What about having people over you haven't seen? What about whatever? All of that kind of stuff. And I think those are very valid questions. And I get kind of pushed and pulled, you know, sort of mentally myself, thinking, you know, I'm just like anybody else. I'm ready to see more people. I'm ready to go to more places. But I'm also trying to remind myself that there's a reason we're doing so well for the moment. And look, we're not doing all that well. We have more than 100,000 deaths. The reason that right now the case numbers have continued to go down is probably somewhat weather-related and also behavior-related. We've done a pretty good job of getting used to changes in our lives, and we can't completely let our guard down. And so I do get frustrated when people don't care at all. At the same time, I'm a human like others, and when listeners send me an email, Jane, that says, well, there's people on my street who gathered in the backyard the other day, and I wanted to go yell at them, I'm thinking, I don't know that that's the best way either, and I'm trying to split the difference. How do you find yourself splitting the difference there?
Well, again, it's an individual decision. And I think in the last month, I think Mother's Day was a big watershed moment for a lot of families when people haven't seen their parents or their grandparents for a long time. And we do have to recognize that in New York, we have done a remarkable job of slowing the spread and bending the curve. And we know the infection rate is decreasing. So we can be a little bit more confident that we have a little better handle on who might be infected. But it's all a matter of personal decision-making. You know, if I know that I haven't seen anybody outside my own house and my the people that I live with for a couple of weeks and nobody's been sick and some of us have been tested, then we can be pretty sure that we're not going to infect somebody else. But you can never be sure about the somebody else. So it's a matter of personal decision-making and how you're going to expand your bubble. I think a lot of families did that around Memorial Day. And again, you're right, when the weather got nice, a lot of things loosened up. And we'll see how that plays out with our infection rates going forward. At least in New York, we can trust that they're reporting appropriately. In some states, we know that they're not reporting appropriately. So there are differences.
And I think, and I wonder if you feel the same way. I tend to feel very differently about, and I don't want to just bifurcate society here, but I feel very differently about people who have these sort of weak or human moments. For example, let's say you're dropping something off and you haven't seen your mother in a long time and she comes out and you give her a hug, or you embrace, or, you know, cousins or kids who haven't seen each other embrace, or you have a moment where you get together and, you know, you cut loose a little bit, and you know that there's a risk, and you know that you may have to, you know, make sure that you're following up appropriately. But a weak moment, I think, or even just a human moment, is not the same as just sort of a scorn or a defiance about the entire process here. The idea that because case numbers are going down in most places, that somehow this pandemic thing was a bust or it was oversold. I mean, we've got more than 100,000 people dead, and there are some people, and in some parts of this country, where wearing a mask is viewed as some sort of a weak political act. I don't view those things as the same at all, and I feel differently about the second category. How do you feel, Jane?
Exactly. I agree completely, Evan. And the way I explained it to one friend was, how are you going to feel when you have to talk to a tracer? So if you come down with COVID and they say to you, who have you seen in the last 10 days? How are you going to feel about answering that question? I think it's going to be very different for people who just saw another family or family members who were tried to be careful. And that's very different from somebody who went out to a bar or went out to a pool party and didn't protect themselves. Unfortunately, you know, after the last weekend, a lot of people changed the rules because they were upset about other things. But we'll see how that plays out.
I'd love to hear from listeners if you have felt more comfortable slowly taking steps, more rapidly taking steps, how you feel about where we are right now. You know, if your personal habits have changed, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We will post for you on our various platforms, I thought, a really helpful article from NPR, 14 activities and the risk ratings. Everything including, by the way, let's say you've got people hanging out in your backyard socially distanced across a fire, physically distanced across a backyard fire. Can someone run in real quick to use your bathroom? NPR says the risk, well, the experts they talk to, is low. There's not zero risk, but it's not the same as some other activities. So we'll post that list if you're curious about that, because I think that will be helpful. And I think the hard part here, Jane, is that with this warm weather, the spring was so cold for so long, and then all of a sudden it just hit like a wave. And I honestly think if you fell asleep in February and you woke up 2 weekends ago and you parachuted into Rochester and you went down to Abbott's at the beach or wherever else, I'm not sure you'd think, hey, something's different here. You know, like, is there something globally going on? I don't think you would. Do you think so?
No, I think you're right, depending on where you're going and what you're trying to do. But, you know, if you're trying to make a medical appointment, if you want to go to a hairdresser, if you want to visit a business, all of a sudden you do notice that things are different. You know, some businesses have been deemed essential, so they've stayed open. Others haven't. And now, you know, in my profession, we're struggling with how do we reopen a medical practice in a safe way, because the infection is a two-way street. And the governor's right. You know, the low infection rate of healthcare workers who use masks and gloves shows us that masks work. But people, you know, and people are having to get used to the new rules about going to your doctor. You may be asked to be waiting in the parking lot until somebody calls you in. You may not sit in a waiting room. You may go straight to an exam room. You may only see one staff person who tries to handle all of the demographics. So we're going to be relying a lot more on computers to, you know, book the appointment, confirm your insurance, check to see how you've been feeling the day before your appointment, those sorts of things. We'll protect the people in the office as much as protecting the patients who are coming there.
Talking to Jane Dodds, who's a former medical practice manager. And the article we talked about, by the way, is called From Camping to Dining Out, How Experts Rate the Risks of 14 Summer Activities. It's from NPR, and we are posting it on our platforms if you want to check that out. So Jane, as someone who has observed for many years the way human beings react to desired changed health behaviors, yes, sex is on that list, disease spread, things like that. Are you impressed with how we've done during this pandemic? Are you disappointed in certain ways? Are you surprised it became a culture war? I mean, I'm naive. I actually thought in March, this will be the one thing that we can't turn into a culture war. We're going to come together on this one. I'm always wrong, it turns out. Just remember that. Are you surprised, impressed, or disappointed in any directions there?
I'm flabbergasted that people deny science. It's hard for me to understand how people can claim that COVID is somehow a political hoax. Isn't it amazing that they've convinced 100,000 people to die for a hoax, or they've convinced, you know, 80 countries around the world to declare? I mean, this is a disease. It's a virus. And, you know, as much as people don't understand the difference between a virus and a bacteria, and the lethality of the virus and comparing it to the cold or the flu, you know, science is real, and we know how you get the virus. It gets into your body through your face, through your mouth and your nose and your eyes. So the way it's going to get there is you're either going to breathe it, or your fingers are going to pick it up and you're going to put your fingers on your face and you're going to get the disease that way from someone who's got it. And we've done a remarkable job in New York at slowing the curve because we have stayed at home and used masks and started tracking where it's coming from and limiting the ability to spread. We haven't done as well as other countries, and we're going to be seeing in the next few weeks and months how it plays out in some of the other states who haven't been doing this. But yeah, it's remarkable to me that people deny the science.
With more information, we seem to be more comfortably at least assessing the much lower risk of transmission outdoors. And so, if anything, there's a luck component to when this started here, because when everybody was just about done with it was right when more of us could get outside. That's fortunate. Doesn't mean, of course, that you can't get infected outdoors or that it can't transmit. It can. But it's a much, much different thing based on the latest research. And so, Jane, before I bring in Willie Lightfoot for his thoughts on this, which I think are important here, Do you think public health leaders are in a hard spot here? Do you think that the phased reopening and the limitations that we're putting on indoor seating, for example, when restaurants reopen potentially next Friday, do you think that that's all good and wise from what you have observed? And do you expect us to sort of handle that? And do you relate to some of the cabin fever and the frustration for people who are just sort of done with it, even though we can't afford to be done with it yet?
Yeah, I certainly relate. No, I mean, nobody likes this. What's kind of frustrating is the fact that some of the rules and regulations that seem to be being tailored for their audiences. I know specifically the CDC guidelines about large gatherings, and the White House apparently removed the sections on religious gatherings, when part of what we know specifically is that singing in a group is dangerous because everybody breathes at the same time. And you look at the infection rate in small choir and chorus rehearsals where people have been singing together, and the infection rate is much higher. Of course, that's not outdoors. But, you know, people have to be mindful of how we get the disease. And I think going forward, we're going to be in much better shape because we now have testing and we have tracing and we can figure out where it's coming from and how it's spreading. And then people have to judge for themselves how much risk they're willing to take.
Have you changed your own habits in recent weeks at all?
I'm staying home. I'm, you know, aside from loosening, you know, widening the bubble a little bit so I could see my grandchildren a couple of weeks ago. And I'll tell you, both of my sons and their families have been quarantining at home. They're working from home. They don't go anywhere and they don't visit to protect me and to protect their other grandmothers and other grandfathers. So, we've changed a lot. So,
And how do you like the Netherlands approval? The Netherlands thumbs up to a summer, as they called it, a sex buddy. How do you feel about that?
It's honest. I mean, at least, you know, the most European countries are much more advanced, farther advanced than the United States in terms of how they deal with sex and sexuality. I'm not sure we'll ever get there to that sex buddy. it works for some people. I'm not sure it would work here.
Jane Dodds is a former medical practice manager. I want to bring in Willie Lightfoot, who is the president of the United Professional Barbers and Cosmetologists Association and vice president of Rochester City Council. He has a slammed week of work with a lot going on in the city here. We talked on Friday, right after the governor's announcement this past Friday, that not only phase two was happening, but that meant barbershop salons and a chance to reopen, but also with some requirements for testing. He had some concerns about those aspects here. So keep in mind, Willie and I are talking here before a lot of the events regarding protest movements and BLM and more really picked up in the last few days here. That's why it's sort of absent from the conversation. But this is Willie Lightfoot.
Thank you for having me back. It's always a pleasure.
Well, we heard from the governor that with the starting of phase two, not only barbershops, hair salons are open, but the expectation is and the rule is that those doing the haircutting have to get tested. What comes to mind for you? I'm not sure that we knew this was coming. Did you know that was coming?
No, that was we've been listening to and hearing across the country various different versions of reopening for the appearance enhancer industry, barbers and salons, but that is one that I don't recall hearing anywhere else.
Is it okay with you? Is it a problem?
I respect it for in the sense of being as safe as we possibly. You know, the governor continuously reiterates opening up and being safe, so I respect that. You know, but at the same time, one would have a few questions with that recommendation of being tested before and every 2 weeks for barbers and stylists. And the first question would be, at whose cost? You know, clearly they're going to be significant, and we talked about this when I was on your show before, additional costs that are that these business owners, micro business owners in some instances, are going to be required to now start to be able to provide for their clients and or the individuals that are working in their facilities. So there's PPE, things that are going to have to be sanitation, things that are going to have to be required. And so now, is this going to be an additional cost?
I don't think so. I think the testing is free, isn't it?
Okay. Well, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? You can't assume anything, right? So that's the first question. Is there a cost? And if there's not, then I think that it's a good approach. However, here's another thing that someone may pose and say, okay, you walk into a shop, you're the customer, you come up to me and you say, okay, Willie, I want to see, have you been tested? I go, sure, yeah, I've been tested. But what about you? what about the client? You know what I mean? I know I may be not have it and may not be asymptomatic, but what about the person? So I know it's just maybe a way of them, they have to test somebody, right? It has to be some type of tracking mechanism. I get that. So, overall, it's for public safety, man, and I'm always going to be on the side of erring for safety.
Do you think barbers are going to, not just you, but do you think your colleagues in the appearance enhancement industry are going to get on board with this?
That's a very good question, Evan. And what I can say, just like last week, 2 weeks ago, I would say, when the governor said that phase two would start at least 2 weeks, the key word was at least, right? And so we knew everybody was scrambling yesterday because that was 2 weeks prior to him making that statement. And people heard what they wanted to hear, which was 2 weeks. I think you may see the same thing in this instance. The key word in the statement about the testing was recommended. Okay, so it's not mandatory. It's not potentially going to be enforced. So what is it to make anyone, and then in the black and brown community, Evan, as you know, the disparities in healthcare and the fears of most African-American males, the data shows, a lot of them don't go to the doctor like they should, right? And they're afraid of tests. So here you have a situation where you're recommending that they go and take this test that has been appeared, even though you said on your show, and I'm going to go take it. I'm going to go take it just to prove to my community that there's nothing to be afraid of, and it's painless, and it's something that you need to do. But I think a lot of people will be fearful of the exam, potentially.
Maybe you can show them it's no big deal. In fact, my colleague Brett Dahlberg said it feels like if you've ever jumped into a pool or a lake and you didn't hold your nose and some water went up your nose real fast and it's that uncomfortable like ugh something up your nose,
sure.
And then it's gone. Yeah. I mean it's uncomfortable for 10 mm-hmm. seconds and then it's over. But I hear you. I mean I know people. Can get sort of weirded out by it.
Yeah, so I'm hopeful that they won't. I'm hoping that people will take the governor's recommendation. I'm hoping that many of us will take the test, go live on your social media so people can see you taking it, so that people can take away some of the fears of it. But I'm glad that at least he made a decision, and they took a lot of safety precautions. And they put them out there today, and I think that's a good move.
You got customers calling? Are they waiting to get in the door?
I do. And originally, my goal was to, my plan was to, whatever date that they came up with reopening, my plan was to wait at least an additional 2 weeks prior to me opening. And that was before I knew that they were going to be that we would be able to take these tests. Because you remember when the test came out, only essential people could get the test.
Right.
So I think that's why a lot of people didn't line up to go take it. But if they're going to make us a part of those essential people, then that makes me feel a little more comfortable about reopening.
Willie Lightfoot, you are always essential. Now.
Thank you, brother.
So let's talk about what you're seeing in the city at large here. Because, last weekend, of course, we have seen a lot of warm weather lately, finally, and we've seen people ready to get outside. My son and I rode our bikes down. I live in Chilliwack, went down to the port, went to Abbott's. I mean, there's a ton of people down there, and
right.
We passed a lot of backyard parties. They were pretty packed and they were shoulder to shoulder. And you know, I get it. I'm not shaming anybody. Like, I know why people are feeling like, you know, they're just so ready to get out. Are you satisfied with the etiquette and how people are handling this? You think we can do better? What do you make of that, Willie?
I think we can do much better. And I'm frustrated at the crime, the violence, the disrespect for authority and for you know, the law and rules and the regulations. You know, I'm very disappointed in a lot of folks from how they have been handling this particular pandemic when it comes to protecting your circle. And I think that a lot of people have laxed their ability to do all of the recommendations and the guidelines that have been recommended from us since the beginning of us knowing that this pandemic was running rampant and very fluid in our community. And I would just reiterate to folks that, you know, you could be asymptomatic with this thing. I look at Ted O'Brien, who's a good friend of mine, who came out of the hospital 3 weeks induced into a coma, had all, and when you listen to his interview and you hear of all the specialists that he had working on his on him coming back and recovering from this COVID virus and the fight that he had to do to get back out of the house and to his family. And you think of what that went through and what his family went through. And he was one of the lucky ones, you know, that made it off that ventilator and was able to come home. And then, you know, and then you think of how people just totally disregard and put people in harm's way. I think we can do better. Absolutely.
And so before I let you go, then, how do you get that behavior to change? And here's why I ask. I ask because, again, I didn't invite you on the program to sort of shame people who are cutting loose a little bit or frustrated or just want to go hang out with friends, want to party a bit, want to do whatever. I mean, it's human behavior. Abstinence demands for a long period of time don't really work. At the same time, we've got to kind of settle into a groove of something that does work, that's kind of in the middle. We can't go all the way back to where we were before, but we can't be locked down forever. How do you find that middle groove, and how do you convince people to get on board with it?
Well, I think we're you know, this is new, and we have to continually remind ourselves of that none of us have ever been where we are today with this pandemic. So when you think about the holistic picture of it, you know, the larger picture, we're doing a pretty amazing job.
Yep.
You know, yeah. When you really look at what we've been thrown into as a region, as a county, as a city, and I have to be honest with you, I think we're as Cuomo said, we're trying to kick this COVID tail. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But at the same time, since it's new, and it's a new normal or a new abnormal, we're going to have to be as aggressive to educate and have the right people educated. We're going to have to go on these blocks and corners and get the people that people respect, even if they may not be the folks that we respect, but we're going to have to get the folks, the leaders, they're leaders all over, right? And we're going to have to get those leaders on the corners to understand that this affects not only you, your family, because everybody's got somebody they love. Okay, and so we have to make this very personable for people. We have to be consistent in our education, consistent in our messaging, and we have to get credible messengers to put the message out there so that the voices that normally don't listen to, let's say, government voices or news voices, but they may listen to their peers. And so we have to recruit them, and we have to be consistent in our messaging about protecting your circle and practicing social and physical distancing, washing your hands, and doing all of the guidelines that's going to keep us safe.
That's Willie Lightfoot, Vice President of Rochester City Council and a barber in Rochester. And before we get our only break, and we're going to bring in Brandon Drew from Abbott's Frozen Custard in our second half hour, but Jane Dodds, as a former medical practice manager, let me just ask you a little bit about something Willie said there. Because I know that you're concerned about health disparities. Willie said it's going to be a challenge to convince black barbers to go get tested, that there is, especially black men, that there's not a whole lot of trust in the medical system. Outcomes haven't been good. Access hasn't always been there. And now you're being told, well, you want to go to work every 2 weeks, you got to go. And he's worried about that. He's going to work on that. I just want to get your take on if this reflects just a kind of a growing, well, just sort of an ongoing disparity and just another sort of small fissure that we have in this country.
It is. I mean, there shouldn't be any reason to fear the testing. You know, nobody likes the Q-tip up their nose, but we're all going to have to get used to it. You know, there's some discussion about when college kids can go back to campus or when kids can go back to elementary school, and a lot of that will revolve around testing. And, of course, we've got to be confident that the tests are accurate because there's a lot of different tests out there. But in order to get back to anything, any semblance of normal society where people gather in classrooms and congregations and political meetings and rallies, we have to know who's infected. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to get used to being tested. And I think Willie is absolutely right. You know, they're going to have to show by demonstration, like the governor did, that you can get tested. And hopefully we'll get a better turnaround time. People won't be waiting for many days and weeks for the results. And it'll be reassuring to know who's infected and to know that most people aren't. But we do need to identify, track, and trace.
Turn the lights on. I'm going to get my second test today. So any listeners who are heading out to MCC, I'll see you this afternoon. It's my second test today, and I look forward to that. I think it's a tremendous privilege, and I'm grateful for it, and I hope it continues to expand to more people in the population. Let's get our only break of the hour, and we'll continue with this conversation about the way we are living a little differently during this pandemic summer here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, Wednesday on The Next Connections. If there is going to be real police reform in this country, what should it look like? There are calls to end the militarization, the equipment that comes from the Pentagon to police departments. There's calls regarding chokeholds and other methods of securing suspects that police are allowed to use. There's calls regarding immunity and prosecuting officers. We'll talk about all of it Wednesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I want to welcome in Brendan Drew, who is Vice President of Business Development for Abbott's Frozen Custard, who's on the line with us now. Hi, Brendan. How are you?
Hi, Evan. I'm doing pretty well. How's your day going?
Well, it's good. And I want to tell our listeners why we put this interesting panel together here. This all really started a couple of weekends ago when my 8-year-old son and I took a bike ride down to the port, the original Abbott's down there. And everyone in the whole world was out there. That's when I thought if you fell asleep in February and you woke up today, you would not look around and think much was different. Now, maybe you would think, well, why are people wearing masks? But because I'm sort of a nerd journalist, I was in line for a while at Abbott's, and I waited for us. There were 40 people in line. 6 people out of 40 were wearing masks. And, you know, you had the markings on the ground 6 feet apart for waiting in line. I'd say maybe half were sort of ignoring that. And then, you know, one of the nice young women serving, I asked how it's going. And she said, you know, people aren't really kind of doing what they're asked to do very much. But, you know, she said, we're trying to hang in there and have fun. But she said she was a little nervous and, you know, didn't know she wanted to keep doing that because, you know, the compliance wasn't all that great. But at the same time, people have been bursting at the seams to get out, to go to Abbott's, to do different things. How are you feeling about what you're seeing so far with this, Brendan?
You know, I think as time has gone on, more and more people have started to take it more seriously. You know, we've added more social distancing signage, right? Those stickers you mentioned on the ground, we've added more of those. And we've coached our employees to kind of, you know, be firm about helping guests when they approach our windows or our counters, please stand here, or please wait there, or please do this, or please do that, just to make everyone feel more comfortable. You know, when I walked into Wegmans the other day, it was really nice when the young lady checking me out was like, oh, could you please stand over here? And I felt great knowing that she said, could you please stand over here? Because, you know, I don't want to put us in an awkward position where we're less than 6 feet apart, and I know she has to stand where she has to stand, and I'm more of the customer, right, and just kind of going through the line. So, you know, we've been coaching our teams to really make sure that we're helping the guests as much as possible, you know, follow the protocol and keep everyone safe and keep everyone healthy, because that's the ultimate goal.
Sure, and I want to say that your staff did a phenomenal job when we were down there. We had a great experience.
Thanks.
And I'm not at all sort of bringing the story up to, again, I'm not a shamer at all, and I'm not a lockdown forever guy. In fact, I'm ready just like everybody else is. I just want us to sort of make these whatever shifts are wise, make these shifts so more businesses can get open, do it creatively. I mean, you guys would probably burst into the seams yourself, Brendan, I imagine.
We are waiting for summer to get here. It was very much, everyone wanted to get off their couch, get outside, just like everyone else, right? We are very much looking forward to the day where we could return to whatever the new normal looks like, right? And that's always been the talk since this thing broke in March. How are we going to get back to what we'd like to do is just make people happy.
And I saw a lot of happy people down at the port to see you open. I really did. Have you seen any change in numbers on warm weekend days than you typically see in late spring?
No, it's been pretty actually consistent. There are definitely April was I think a strange month for everyone, right?
Yeah,
as we all kind of try and came to grips with everything.
It was
right?
cold too. It was cold. Yeah.
It was cold, right? Of course. I mean, it's April roster. You get a hit of miss days, right?
Yeah.
And then, May got here and more people were, I guess, getting cabin fever, right, and coming out. And numbers have not been, is the best year ever, right? But I think more and more people are coming to grips with, hey, when I leave my house, I'm going to put a mask on, right? And more people are understanding that businesses like Abbott's are doing everything we can to make sure everyone's safe and healthy and taking the right protocols. So I think more people are, venturing out, right, as the upstate New York area kind of, eases on restrictions, right? We get from phase one to phase two and so on and so forth. We're seeing more and more people kind of, okay, we can go out now, we don't have to stay at home forever, right? Because there are businesses that are trying to do everything we can to make sure everyone's safe.
Before I grab some email and some listener feedback, let me ask both Brendan and Jane, Brendan and Jane about this. Brendan, I hope that your staff has had good experiences with customers. I certainly hope nobody is shaming your staff for wearing masks. We see these reports here and there around the country of people who do that. I think they're more one-offs, but I know it happens at times. Have you had any rough experiences with staffs, with people who don't want to comply with any of this stuff?
No. I think our employees have always been, hey, give me a mask, give me the gloves, do everything we can. And from a guest perspective, I haven't heard of anyone saying, why do you have a mask on or what's with the gloves? I have heard a lot of people actually, we get, emails every single day through our general inbox. And every email has been, wow, went to Abbott's last night, really appreciate that the young lady behind the counter had gloves on or had a mask or went out of her way to make sure that my kid knew it was okay. There's been a lot of great supportive feedback, which is really nice to see, right? Because we know it's awkward. We know it's different. We know we all have to get used to this. But everything we're seeing has been fairly positive.
Jane, if you're out getting ice cream or anywhere sort of in a retail or commercial setting and there are people who are not following, in that kind of a setting, what's your plan of action, Jane?
I haven't been out into those places yet. I've gone to things that are deemed essential. I go to the post office. Like many people stuck at home, we go to the hardware stores, but
that's a good example. Take the hardware store. Let's say there's people who are harassing someone behind the counter for wearing a mask or being said, I won't do it, et cetera, or even just getting close to your space. What's your play there?
What's my play?
Yeah.
My play is to distance, but, I haven't seen that in real life.
Good.
I've been fortunate. I think most people, and I appreciate the governor's order saying that businesses have the right to require a mask.
Mm-hmm.
I have been in a couple of stores where some people, walk right by the sign, not wearing a mask. What I've seen is that everybody in a mask kind of gives them a wide berth and kind of giving them a side eye. But I don't think anybody is interested in starting political arguments in a retail business that doesn't belong to us. It's up to the business owners to manage that. And, just keep your distance,
yeah.
Listen to that old Richard Thompson song, keep your distance.
There you go.
Yeah.
Let me get Sandra and Victor on the phone first. Go ahead, Sandra.
Hello. My daughter the other day said to me, Mom, are you ever going to let the grandkids come over? we've been social distancing, and we really would like to come over and visit inside the house. And that she had heard that asymptomatic people are less contagious. So I did some research, and I found an article published by the Journal of American Medical Association, published on May 28th. It's a small study. 42% of the 78 close contacts of COVID patients in Wuhan, China, showed no symptoms. They had shorter duration of viral shedding, shorter duration of the disease, and less likely to pass it on. Most likely between women, they were women, and only shed virus for 8 days versus 19 days with a contagious person. So my question is, what is the recommendations for visiting with grandchildren in my home?
Can you hang here for 1 second, Sandra?
Yes.
I'll ask Jane first. I mean, Jane is not the policy setter. She's a former medical practice manager, but she's one of the smarter people I know, which is why I asked her to come on this program. And I'm curious to know, just from your own personal view, and this isn't an endorsed government view here, but where do you start with this, Jane? And then I'll try to answer Sandra based on what some of the expert stuff I'm reading.
Okay.
Jane?
Yeah, I would, it's reassuring to hear that people who aren't symptomatic may not be as contagious as people who are sick. Obviously, this is much like a flu. If somebody's sick, you don't go near them. So, but if everybody seems well and they've been isolating for a while, and it's your decision, but many of us have wanted to see our grandchildren, willing to take that risk when we know where they've been and we know who they've been with. We're only going to know people are sick when they get sick, and sometimes there are risks that we're willing to take.
Yeah, and so, Sandra, I would go back to, first of all, what the Canadian government says about double bubbles, the idea that if your household is locked down, and lockdown is sort of it's a different word for everybody. I mean, if you're going to a grocery store, you're not fully locked down. If you're going out to get gas, there's not zero risk. But if you're essentially pretty responsibly locked down and you're not spending time up close indoors with a lot of different people unnecessarily, then maybe instead of just being locked into your own household bubble, you double bubble it. And maybe you're willing to do that. I would not. So my mother is, and I love you, Mom. I've told her story, but, she's in Ohio. She probably couldn't figure out how to listen to me daily if she wanted to, and she would laugh at me saying that. She's the best. She's the absolute best. She's been at the core of my concern since day one. As a woman who smoked for 40 years, as she did, and now in her late 70s, and she has had 3 hospitalized bouts with pneumonia since November. That's my mother. November and December, and then again January into February, and her doctor told her, you can't keep doing this. We have to figure this out. Well, that was right before a respiratory-based global pandemic was coming our way. So would I have her in a double bubble with kids? I hate to say this, but probably not. She's in Ohio. She's in a different state. She's in a very high-risk category, and I worry about her all the time. But I am telling her, get on your patio and have your sister come over. Hang out with neighbors outside. Have a fire. See people, but see them, with a little bit of space between you. I don't know that I would say indoors for extended amounts of time, especially with kids who may be asymptomatic carriers. There's so much we know, but there's so much we don't know. And so I think you have to assess your individual risk, the state of health of the person, and try to find a rhythm that is sustainable. I think, I can't speak for Dr. Michael Mendoza, but I think he would say, you got to be smart, you got to know what the risks are, and you have to find something you can sustain. And I think that's kind of, what everybody's trying to do right now. And I hope that helps you.
It does. I ended up letting them come in, but we all wore masks.
Yeah, sure.
In my house.
Sure.
So that made me feel better because I am 64 with asthma. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get it. But I love my grandchildren. I love them.
I'm with you.
Yeah, you did help me. I'm going to look up double bubble to see what that's all about.
Well, there's a great article in The Atlantic by Julia Marcus, and it's about this notion of whether we can have harm reduction in these various ways. That's why the Netherlands has their ideas, Canada has their ideas, and I think Jane Dodds is right. America's usually a little more puritanical than Europe, but that's an idea for you. And again, I hope you're safe and healthy, and I hope you have a wonderful summer.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
That's Sandra and Victor. Let me read an email, and the person who sent the email asked that I not name them, so I will follow that. But she writes the following. How do you handle situations where family and or friends blatantly disrespect your choice of how to deal with this pandemic? My boyfriend and I went to his family barbecue over Memorial Day weekend. We did our best to maintain social distance from everyone else, though sometimes not too successfully for my comfort. At the end of the night, one of his family members came up to me for a hug, which I declined. In return, that family member called me a COVID witch, and I'm using the word witch as a euphemism for a swear term, a COVID witch. So what would be the best way to respond and avoid these situations, especially since we are becoming more relaxed about isolation? Thank you for your time. All right, Jane Dodds, if someone called you a COVID witch, and we're euphemizing here, I'm curious to know what you might say.
I might say, you know what? I had a real bad fever yesterday, but I decided to come anyway. I was trying to protect you. I mean, let's turn it around. I mean, this is a two-way street. And as much as we don't want to catch it from somebody else, if we've got it, we don't want to give it to somebody else. And if the people out there are thinking that it's all a hoax, they need to start understanding that not everybody feels the same way. People have different risk tolerances. I'm older and have allergy-induced asthma myself. I don't want to get it.
Yeah, I can't imagine saying that to somebody. I don't understand it. I just don't. I cannot. And I try. Like, I don't have a lot of skills in life. One of my jobs is try to figure out how people communicate and how minds are made up and to try to be humble and more open. And I fail regularly and I do my best. This one I can't get my head around. I cannot understand the psychology of calling someone a slur because they won't hug you at an outdoor family party when they haven't been spending time with you. I just don't understand that. Like, let's be kind to one another. And you know what? I mean, listeners, if you are more comfortable and you are making your own decisions to change your behavior, but others are not, try to show some love and kindness. This is hard for people. People are trying to figure this out, and that's tough. Let me get Jillian's email. Jillian says, I still keep hearing that people should wear masks as soon as they leave the house. This is not true. You mentioned the other day that some of your guests are still talking as if this is the protocol. The protocol, the way I understand it, is that if you're outside or even inside and you're within 6 feet of another person, you should wear a mask. Otherwise, you don't need to. Please address this. Yes, essentially, Jillian, that's right. My point that I keep making is have it with you. Mine's around my neck right now. It's always ready to go because if I find myself in an unexpected tight spot, I can show respect to others by popping it on. If I'm out for a jog, I probably don't have to. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a doctor or a researcher. I probably could jog outside pretty comfortably, but I'm still going to have it with me as a sign of respect so others see it. And, you know, if you don't know what you're going to do during a day, if you're out for a hike, if you're, you know, outdoors, and you don't, if you're out at Abbott's, you don't know, just have it ready. I mean, I don't know, Brendan Drew, I counted a pretty small number of people in line at Abbott's wearing masks. Again, I'm not shaming. It was just something I noticed. Are you noticing anything different? Are you starting to see a slow build of that? Are people getting used to it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think more and more people are realizing it's just about protecting each other, right? You just don't want to get the guy next to you sick or the girl next to you sick, right? And if you're going to be close to people, you might as well take precautions because, right, the asymptomatic people out there, just we don't know. Right. So I think more and more people are getting used to the fact that more and more people are wearing masks or having them with them and just being prepared for whatever eventuality you might run yourself into, you know, whether you're running into the hardware store or Wegmans or wherever. Right. Just it's good to be prepared.
Jane, one of the hard places to protect and I'm thinking about this summer with more people feeling some mental health strain of separation, of wanting to get together, especially grandparents. I want to conclude the hour by just asking you briefly about nursing homes. And, you know, when we think about asymptomatic spread, when we think about lower case numbers, it's easy to get complacent. And obviously we've seen devastating numbers in nursing homes. A lot of more than 100,000 dead have people been in vulnerable communities. As someone who has worked in medical practice for many years, when we look back at this, did we fail at this? And what do we have to keep thinking about going forward into the summer? Because people want to see each other, elderly family members want to see each other. What's on your mind there?
Well, I think we've done the best we could have in a terrible situation with little or no notice. It's particularly heartbreaking in the nursing homes because many of those patients don't understand. They don't understand why they're not getting visitors. They don't understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. And good Lord, what's going to happen when we try and test those patients? I think that the advice to test the staff members as a way of monitoring spread is probably better than trying to do a test on, you know, elderly, demented patients who don't understand why they're being tested so frequently. That's heartbreaking. But many nursing homes have set up visitation rooms where there's social distancing, where you can view people through glass. People can visit outside and communicate with their loved ones inside. But the human contact is what keeps many people going. So we do need to learn how to do better at that. We need to learn how to do better at all of it going forward.
I want to thank our guests for helping us with this conversation about how we are moving into our pandemic summer. Whether you're going out for ice cream, whether you're thinking about who you can see, whether trying to figure out what's comfortable, what you can tolerate. But I keep advising, the only real advice I give, I'm not a doctor and I'm not a health director. Continue to be kind if we can. Just be kind. Thank you, Jane Dodds, former medical practice manager, for hanging in there and having this conversation with us. I greatly appreciate it.
Thanks, Evan.
And Brendan Drew, Vice President of Business Development for Abbott's Frozen Custard. Thanks for the work that your staff is doing. We felt very comfortable and we really appreciate it. We'll see you again this summer.
Well, thanks, Evan. I really appreciate that. You have a great day.
And you too. All right. Really appreciate Willie Lightfoot as well joining us this hour. Hope you are all healthy, safe, and thinking about the best ways we can be kind to one another today and all days. Rob Braden, the engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. We will talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.